This is Dr. Patient, a podcast that examines all the aspects of the patient-provider relationship. I'm your host, Heather Johnston, MD, a real-life doctor and patient. Today, we'll be talking about doctor burnout, what causes it, how to think about it, what to do about it. According to the Mayo Clinic, about 42% of doctors in 2021 reported feeling burned out. And while most doctors consider burnout to be a real issue, almost half of those suffering from it do not talk about it or seek help for it. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Karen Leitner of Karen Leitner MD Coaching. Dr. Leitner has some really insightful thoughts about extrinsic and intrinsic forces that contribute to burnout and what steps doctors can take to start helping themselves.
I decided to go to medical school because I wanted to take care of people. I thought it'd be really easy to just be nice to people. You heard so many things about doctors, how mean they are. They don't listen. They're rude. And I was like, oh, I'm nice. I'll just be super nice and I'll be a great doctor that way. So that was my plan. And then during training, I felt pretty good in medical school until we started to actually hit the wards. And I realized that I have a lot of anxiety around people being sick and worrying about doing the right thing and if they were going to be okay, if things were going to be my fault. I managed that okay, I would say. Residency was not super fun for me, but I made it through. And then I got my dream job doing primary care for, I did internal medicine and pediatrics, so I was caring for families and things were pretty good. Then I got married and had my first child. And then I had my second child. And then I was 6 or 7 years in and I found myself feeling like I was drowning. I felt always worried something bad was going to happen and that I wasn't doing a good enough job for my kids and for my patients. And I just remember the day I was on vacation with my family and I was at the buffet and I was holding my baby and my little toddler was running around and I was trying to get food, but you can't like have a plate and a baby and feed yourself. And I was very nervous about coming back from vacation and opening that electronic medical record and seeing that tidal wave of whatever would hit me. And it wasn't the amount of work. I mean, the amount of work was hard too, but it was like, what if something bad happened to someone and it was my fault? I was exhausted. I was always stressed. I felt like I wasn't doing a great job anywhere because I couldn't split myself in half and do everything I wanted for my kids. So I left. And it took me several years to realize that was burnout, what I had experienced. I thought I just couldn't hack it. And I had a lot of shame around that. I never told anyone that I felt that way. I never reached out for help at my institution. I just knew that like something wasn't working for me. And it was a crisis of conscience because this is what I had wanted to do. So when I left, I didn't really have a plan. I just knew that I wanted to be home more, but I still wanted to do some work. And I had another child and I just did a whole bunch of different kinds of jobs. I did a little bit in pharma. I did some student health. I did some teaching. I did urgent care and I worked at a second opinion company. And that was the job that I really found to be the most fulfilling for me because it was helping patients navigate their healthcare journeys. They would call me like their physician guardian angel because I wasn't actually directly providing care for them, but I was getting all their records, listening to their questions. And for some of them, trying to help them solve, you know, how do I get the right care? What is even wrong with me? Just having the time to collect all their records, just to see everything in one place because, you know, care is so fragmented right now. And I may have been helping 10 or 15 patients when, you know, in primary care, I had a panel of 2,000 patients. So it was just this luxury of time to be able to speak to people as long as they needed, answer their questions, pursue expert second opinion if they needed it. So I loved that role. Long story short, the nature of the role changed and I wasn't happy anymore. And I was very frustrated and I pursued coaching. I had sort of learned about coaching along the way when I had this career reevaluation period in my life. I invested in coaching for myself and it was so helpful that I decided to be a coach just to learn the tools better. And then the pandemic hit and I realized these skills are very valuable and I felt a bit of a responsibility to help other doctors who are on the front line because I wasn't being exposed to COVID. I was safe in my house and so many healthcare workers were really under and still are under such severe stress and exposure. And I wanted to help manage some of that. So I started coaching and now that's what I do full time for women doctors.
Only for women?
Only for women.
what are some of the most common obstacles that doctors are facing that are leading to burnout?
What they think or what I think?
Both.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay, let's just look at the healthcare system. I mean, it does not value the physician, does not prioritize the physician. It's sort of with the development of the electronic medical record, it was supposed to be this gift to the healthcare system to have everything put in one place. And it turns out it is a huge amount of work for physicians to take on, and everything sort of trickles down to them. You know, the healthcare system is in a trajectory that is unsustainable. Managed care, like fee for service, there's a lot of stresses on the system that have made it so that physicians are being paid based on like the volume of patients they see, and hospitals are making money by how many admissions, but short admissions. You know, so there's a lot of strain on the system that trickles down to physicians being asked to practice in ways that doesn't align with their desire to help patients and to spend time with patients and do what's best for patients. So burnout, WHO definition, is a clinical syndrome that has three presenting symptoms, let's say. The first is emotional exhaustion, pretty self-explanatory. The second is depersonalization, so feeling like that lack of empathy for patients, whereas you may have once really felt connected or felt caring about who you're taking care of. You sort of lose that. You sort of don't feel it as much. And the third one is lack of personal efficacy. You sort of feel like nothing I do is matters. Why bother? Why am I even doing this? I don't have any control over anything. So those three things together, the way I think about it is those are the end result of another term that's been described as moral injury, which is originally from sort of the Vietnam era. But Wendy Dean and another co-author wrote an article a few years back that talked about how moral injury is when you are doing things that don't align with your values. So as opposed to like PTSD during the Vietnam era, where people were exposed to violence and death and they're reliving that trauma, the moral injury piece, you've been forced to do something that really goes against your belief system. So imagine a patient is in front of you and they're crying and they're depressed and they need your time, but you have 20 more patients to see and you're like running out the door and you feel bad about that. Or right now, you know, there's such a lack of resources, like mental health resources. So many doctors are seeing, because of COVID and all the isolation and all the financial issues happening, you're seeing depressed, overwhelmed, sort of despondent patient after patient. You have nowhere to refer them to because mental health care is not reimbursed well and it's not prioritized by the healthcare system. We're all about, you know, stents and procedures. So as a physician, seeing all those people and not being able to do anything for them, that creates that moral injury. Having to go through the PA process, like trying to get prior authorization for treatments that you know your patient needs, but the insurers are saying you have to jump through this hoop, and get on the phone for an hour every time you want to order it. You know, so all these things, those are the external factors that contribute to burnout. So I just want to make sure I start there, because if I just start talking about the ways physicians are thinking, physicians get really mad because they're like, it feels like we're blaming them when we say they're burned out, like it's a personal failing instead of like a system-wide problem that they do have some, they do play into in certain ways. And that's where the coaching can help.
You know, I was sort of like you when I started. I was like, I just want to be nice and help people and make people feel better. And I want to hug my patients and I want to help them and I want to giggle with them. The problem today is that physicians are pulled away from patient care, and it's what most of us want. I know I'm totally speaking in generalities, but I mean, most of us want to be with our patients and help patients, but you know, the number of hours or minutes that people spend per day, like where you don't have control over your workday, you're buried in hundreds and hundreds of phone and EMR messages, you're doing prior auths, you don't have enough time to document after you've seen patients, which is really stressful.
But I do think for most doctors, there's, you know, if you are feeling great in your own life and you are nourished and rested and fulfilled and have free time, you don't need your patients to like understand what you're going through. But when you are exposed to COVID, worried about bringing it home to your family, working crazy hours, not getting a break, not sleeping, you know, running around all day, there's this sense that patients don't understand what we are going through, how hard it is, what we've sacrificed, right? There's this sense that like patients think we just make tons of money and we're doctors and right. And it's like, I think that if we were in a better place, if the mental health of physicians was better, that wouldn't be such a tension. But I hear all the time, you know, patients are sitting there talking about their anxiety, their depression, their like struggle. And the doctors are like, what about mine? You know, like this is so hard. It's hard to give of yourself when you're not cared for by yourself. And part of it is the system, but part of it is we don't take care of ourselves, which is where we're going to get to, I'm sure.
You know, the AMA has this series of articles called What Doctors Want Patients to Know About ... And there's all these different topics. And one of them was What Doctors Want Patients to Know About Dr. Burnout. Basically went through a couple of things that it asked patients to do to make the encounter as seamless and efficient as possible, because that will in turn possibly reduce like the doctor's stress of the visit. So it was things like bringing your list of questions to the appointment so that you don't have a ton of follow-up phone calls and emails about things you forgot, being on time to your appointment because it just helps everything run more on time. Connecting with your doctor as a person was number three, asking them, how are you? And it went through a couple of real life scenarios where doctors said they were so appreciative when a patient asked, how are you doing? Especially with the turn of the pandemic, which we're also going to talk about because it's changed everything really in terms of how doctors are feeling about their jobs. And then the last thing was about signing up for electronic medical record portals, because then there's some things that an office can do to minimize how many direct phone calls that needs to make. Like if they just need to let you know a lab result was okay, or you need a referral, like they don't want to have to make the phone call. So I thought that was an interesting collection of items that a patient could do to help a doctor have a better visit.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would love to know how that was received, because I think what's coming up for me now is like thinking that it's all one organism, like the doctor patient unit is all one thing, right? And I think maybe that's the whole point of your podcast, is it feels like they're on opposite sides. It's doctor versus patient. But like if your doctor burns out, A, you lose access. B, you're dealing with a less kind human. C, you get worse care. So, but, you know, I think patients often feel like everyone is entitled to their own perspective. You know, the doctor was rushed. They didn't care about me. They didn't remember this thing I told them. They didn't send their prescription where I wanted it sent. Like it's not like it's one or the other. It's like, yeah, the system is not really designed around patients and making their lives easier, nor is it designed around doctors and making their lives easier, because they really want to give the best care. Like they really want to. And also they're human beings. I think like, that's what I would put. Just remember your doctor is a human being. I do think patients forget that sometimes.
That's part of my intro to the whole podcast, by the way.
Hi.
Yeah, it's just two people in a relationship, you know, yeah. You have to recognize it's just a person on the other side.
Yes.
We talked a little bit about external forces. What about internal forces with doctors and burnout?
Yeah. So where do we even start there? So I love to start with the culture of medicine, which is very problematic. And what do I mean by that? The culture of medicine is sort of like all the subliminal messaging we get as we rise up through the ranks as medical students. It's like doctors are, I even had someone say this during a coaching call. It's like, we're not supposed to get sick. We're the helpers. We're not the ones who need help, right? We're supposed to be infallible. We're strong. We're stoic. We work all the time and we just power through everything. And that shows up, you know, during our training, that they're not restrictions on work hours, that, you know, no one ever wants to call out sick when you're in residency, because it means someone, one of your peers who's already exhausted and sleep deprived, is going to have to cover for you. So people are, you know, showing up like wheeling their IV pole around before they go deliver a crazy town. So it's just, there's such a double standard. Like we are not told care for yourself. You need rest. You're valuable. Maternity leave, so short. used to be, if you got any, you know, 2 weeks, you were back on the wards. So it's this, I mean, it was designed around men. The reason it's called residency was because they lived in the hospital all the time because they had someone at home to like raise a family and do all those things. So there's a lot of problems with the messaging from the system and the culture and how you're not supposed to make mistakes and how shameful it is if you do make a mistake and how humiliating it would be if there's a lawsuit against you, right? We do that. We doctors do that as opposed to like normalizing humans are human. They make mistakes. We can all learn from it. We are not gods. We are not all powerful. We need to own up to when we don't know something and it's okay to have feelings, all that stuff. So that's one piece is like, we've internalized some of that. So, you know, I mean, I love to joke about this, but like name me a doctor woman who goes to the bathroom when she has to. Instead of like holding it. We hold it. We like hold it forever. Oh, yeah.
Bladder strength in female residents is like ironclad.
Right? Not right. And I remember, you know, when I was even like, I had my own, I was working for myself. I could set my schedule however I wanted. And I would like give myself 2 minutes to eat. And then I would like inhale my food. Why? Like, this is just something we just learned how to, it just became like, or I might not eat at all, or I might not sleep. So that kind of messaging, like that we kind of play into like, oh, I don't want to be weak. So I don't want to, you know, ask for extra time off when I'm pregnant. I'm going to work up to like the very last day. So I don't, right. It's just, it's nonsense. It doesn't, I'm not sure. What do you think about me saying all these things? Like, it's not sustainable.
Well, I developed kidney stones in residency because I didn't drink water for 3 years. So, you know,
And I think that's part of like, we have these standards for ourselves that are not humane and we don't go pee. We don't show up late for a minute because we needed a drink of water. We don't care for ourselves and we can blame it on the system. But at some point, we've internalized it and we're doing it to ourselves. And we don't want to ask for help because we're worried we're going to seem weak. So why do we do that?
There's no room for that stuff. There's no room made for it. I mean, when I was in, this was just my particular group that I was working with, but it was a busy Medicaid clinic. And if I didn't show up that day, I couldn't even get a hold of half of my patients. They were, you know, either didn't have phones or they were at work or whatever. And so they would all show up. Someone else just has to now add them on top of their patient load. So why did that happen? A, partly because patients need to be seen, but B, because the clinic was unwilling to lose the patient. Was unwilling to call and say, we just can't do your checkup tomorrow. And on the flip side of that, when I'm a patient and somebody cancels my appointment, I'm very annoyed about it. So I understand. But I guess the problem is that, yeah, it leaves no room at all for things like doctors to eat and pee and have lunch and get sick.
Well, it also leads to them leaving medicine. Right? So it's like,
as evidenced by both of us.
Yes. It makes total sense to be like, if I don't come in when I'm sick, someone else is going to have to do extra work. So yeah. I'm going to come in. But it's like how I'm going to come in sick and then I'm going to get sicker. Yeah. And I'm going to be take off 2 months because so it doesn't actually solve the underlying problem. Like we're thinking that when I come and don't take care of myself, it's so that no one else has to cover for me, except then I'm going to be hospitalized and everyone's going to have to cover for me.
Well, it's a choice you make that you'd rather suffer yourself than make someone else suffer.
Like, what if when doctors actually take care of themselves when they're sick, they are less overwhelmed, more able to help a colleague when they're not there, provide better care. They're more efficient. They're more on top of things. Right? Like, what if the opposite were even true?
I can't even imagine that world, Karen. Like, I can't imagine my clinic having told me like, you don't look well. Why don't you go home and take a break? I don't even know. I don't know what that would even look like.
So I'm not trying to deny the reality of the world, but then there's also like, for me, for example, I would be like, I can't leave my practice. I can't leave my patients. What's going to happen to them? It's like, actually, I went on 2 maternity leaves and everyone was totally fine. No one died. No one was overwhelmed, but it's this, I can't have, what if people are mad at me? Oh my God, what if my patient is mad at me? It's like, that's because of our people-pleasing tendencies and our desire to want to make everyone happy all the time as women.
But also the recognition that you're in a relationship with those people, right? I mean, I knew every one of my teenage patients, like I knew everything about them and they knew stuff about me and we would hug when they came in and I didn't want to let them down.
Right. But is it letting them down to stay home when you're sick? It's like, where do we create some of our own burnout? Like, it's possible. It's possible someone might not do as good as you, but that's not the most useful thing to be thinking when you need to take care of yourself. If we're always putting, like what I say to my clients sometimes, is like when we run around working so hard to avoid ever disappointing anyone else, it's when we end up disappointing ourselves. And sometimes you have to put yourself first. And that's what we all have a problem with. And this is why women physicians like don't take care of themselves, because they're taking care of their kids and their families and their patients. And they're always putting themselves at the bottom of the priority list. And we choose that.
I guess part of the thing too is that with training, you are at the bottom when you're a medical student and you're told to like accept your role there. Like you are going to get the worst shift. You are going to be up all night. You are going to do the worst jobs. And I guess, and you're really told as a resident, I mean, you really can't miss work. It is a huge thing when you're a resident because those people are overworked beyond belief. And so the problem is it's like you have to come out of all of that and then switch your mindset and you don't.
Right? That's so perfect. You know what you're describing? Mm. That is called learned helplessness.
Oh, I had
that. We internalize learned helplessness. We don't think we can change anything because all our power is like we put it outside of us. We all do this. It's like part of being trained. Why is it, do you think that like there's a nurses union,
yeah,
MA union, they get breaks, they get lunch because they speak up. And we, when it's us, we don't speak up. Here's another example. Like I have a client I worked with briefly who, you know, it was similar sort of situation where she and her colleagues, they were up against this hospital system that was being very abusive, whatever. And they said no, and they stood up and they had a lawsuit and they spent all this money and all this time. And in the end, they did not win. So, you know, you get to decide what you want to think about that. Like if winning means changing the whole system, is that what it means? Or is winning being true and being in integrity with yourself and standing up for the things you believe in, regardless of what you are able to change or not? Like, that's where so much power lies. And we don't harness our own power to be like, well, you did eventually. You're like, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this anymore. No. But we think we can't leave. We think we can't ask for things. And if we ask once and we get told no, or we ask twice, it's like, what if we just keep asking? Like, you didn't get fired for doing that. You just decided, I'm tired of doing this.
Yeah. That's really true. Where were you in 2012 when I needed you?
Oh, it's never too late.
This might be too difficult to answer. I don't know. But what are some common pieces of advice that you end up giving to people?
Yeah. So coaching isn't really giving advice, which is really fascinating. Like sometimes people, it's not like I've figured life out and I'm just like zen. It's more about noticing how you're thinking, developing an awareness of the thoughts you have during the day and realizing that some of them are helping you and some aren't.
Is it like a lot of self-reflection? Is it?
It's not self-reflection. It's just noticing that I come into work and my MA like hasn't roomed the patient yet. And I get mad at them and I sit there fuming and I may get ruin my whole day because I'm so mad at them all day. Like, what does that do for me? And like, what if I chose to think about that differently so I can either communicate my expectations to them repeatedly, look at the system, look at a process so it flows differently. It's like, if I'm just stuck in the like, my MA is all like in the blame and thinking that I'm angry because of what my MA does, I have no control over my day and I'm just like carrying around anger and annoyance on top of everything versus me realizing like the reason I'm angry is because I'm thinking something about that MA and I'm making it mean something, or I'm thinking something about that patient who came late. Here's another example. Like, patients are going to be late. They just are. We can't stop it. We wish we can. We can try to have processes in place for when they're late. But what happens sometimes is we think, oh, that person is being disrespectful to me. And actually, the patient has like their own crazy life. They're not thinking about you at all. They're just like in their own experience. But you like physically feel disrespected all day because your patients are late and you carry that with you. And like what that look like and how you help yourself get through your day when you're feeling angry and disrespected. So it's like, oh, you can just get rid of all of that if you don't want to. And just like let things go. So it's a way of sort of not just being complacent, but taking control over. You don't have to lie awake at night for 3 nights because your boss made a comment about you that is totally untrue. Like, you get to decide what you want to make it mean that they said that.
So in the patient being late scenario, would you talk about, in a coaching session, would you be talking more about how somebody can think differently about that encounter and like change their mental reaction to it and how they think about it? Or would you, and, or would you be talking about how they could learn to give feedback to that patient to not be late? You know what I mean? Like, part of what's been on my mind about burnout is what physicians can do inside their own head to minimize it and prevent it more. But then the other part of it is some of the things that help lead towards physician burnout are inherent problems in the system. And how much should we engage with that? On one hand, I think it's incredibly beneficial for people to just learn to deal with things more positively. But on the other hand, if I come to work and I'm supposed to see 12 patients in a half a day, but somehow I'm overbooked and I've got 16, how do you figure out how to spend your time if you're trying to minimize your own burnout, like by changing your own mentality or by changing the system around you?
I think they go hand in hand. I think when you're burned out, you're not really in a place to be able to go make huge changes in the system. It's a little bit of a leap of faith, but like the coaching work and the thought work, leaving the system exactly as it is, like decreases emotional exhaustion, decreases overwhelm, increases your feeling in control of your life. That's something. So when women come into my program, it's 8 weeks and we do only thought work. I'm not changing the healthcare system during these 8 weeks, right? It stays the same. And a lot of them are burned out. And by the end, they all say they feel better. They all say they feel more in control of their lives. They have more compassion for themselves. So the way they're talking to themselves, a lot of what we experience is coming from how we like beat ourselves up in our minds all day, every day. So unlearning some of those things. In coaching, we always talk about feelings. Our feelings drive everything we do. Not in like a woo-woo way, but honestly, like you wanted to become a doctor, you had to feel motivated and determined and keep going, even though lots of obstacles came up in your way. So if we want to change the healthcare system and make it better, what are the feelings we need to feel? We need to feel like strategic, motivated, determined, resourceful, empowered, or nothing's going to change. Those are feelings you have to feel to have make something change. And our feelings come from how we're thinking. And so when we're burned out, we tend to feel hopeless, exhausted, resentful. Those feelings are not going to change the system. They're not even going to allow me to see where there's the possibility for change, because those feelings keep me very stuck and narrowly minded. And the other feelings, suddenly we see opportunity and possibility where we never saw it before. So it's like learning how to get out of those feelings that are just, they're justified. They don't serve us. They're not useful. Feeling resentful is like, have you heard this expression? When I'm resenting my clinic because it's not valuing me enough, it's like drinking poison and expecting your enemy to die. It's like, I'm the one feeling it. When I'm angry, I'm the one feeling it. My CEO doesn't feel it. My nurse who's not doing their job doesn't feel it. I'm feeling it. If I actually want to change something, I need to feel open. I need to feel empowered to go talk to someone about it. I need to, like this example of the late patient, I coached someone recently. They had a patient who was late for like 2 years. They were late every time. Why hadn't my client said anything to them about it? It's that fear of, it's that people pleasing. It's like being able to feel the discomfort of saying to someone like, hey, I noticed you're late each time. It's, you know, even like saying it from like, we go to like defensive, resentful. They don't respect me, blah, blah, blah. And then we just like, don't want to talk about it. We like shut down, you know, we want to avoid feeling that way versus like, all right, this feels a little uncomfortable. I'm going to assume that person's doing their best. I'm going to approach them from a loving place and just say, listen, it's not okay for you to be late. So here's a boundary. If you're late the next time, I can't see you, or I'll see you, but it has to be at the end of my session. Or if you're late three more times, I'm going to have to find you another dog. Whatever it is, like, we just avoid all those feelings. So learning how to feel the uncomfortable feelings is like our path towards making really big change.
My guest today has been Dr. Karen Leitner of Karen Leitner MD Coaching. She coaches women doctors who are looking to feel better in their lives.
I coach women physicians exclusively, and primarily I offer group programs. So I have a group virtual coaching program that's called Feel Better, and I offer it 3 to 4 times a year. It's a smaller group, so there's usually 20 to 25 women, and I teach the tools towards helping with some of the thought work and mind management and overcoming things like imposter syndrome and just really empowering them to feel like they have more control over their work life balance. And so they can find out about those programs on my website, which is www.karenleitnermd.com. It's L-E-I-T-N-E-R. The cool thing is that I'm able to offer CME. And so for a lot of women physicians, they're able to get this covered by their workplaces. And the reason why, you know, this is considered a kind of professional development, but at the same time, most institutions realize there's a really big problem with physician burnout right now. And in addition to just wanting what's best for the workforce that they're in charge of, it also is a financially smart investment for an institution to make, because the cost of replacing a physician who has left is way more than paying for them to learn skills that help them feel happier, be less tired, be more in charge, be more productive, and just be more self-actualized.
Thanks for listening today. To catch up on more episodes and to get new ones delivered directly to you, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts: Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and more. If you'd like to be a guest or have an idea for an episode, let me know at www.drpatientpodcast.com. That's drpatientpodcast.com. Here's the disclaimer. Even though I am a doctor, I'm not your doctor. These stories, my comments, and all discussion is purely reflection about what's working in the healthcare system and what isn't. Don't use any medical information that you hear in these episodes to diagnose or treat yourself. If you have a question about your health, get in touch with your doctor or local health clinic.